Hello, Blind Cool Tech listeners. Sam Britton back here once again with yet another podcast. Now, this one doesn't have anything to do with routers today or Sapura telephone adapters. What we're going to be talking about today is some interesting little experiences that I've run into with Mac OS X. Since I, like a few of you out there, use the Macintosh, I thought I would share this with you. I run, in addition to what I run here with this particular machine that we do our broadcasts on, I run an FTP server. And I had some strange issues with that machine this morning. Namely, it had to do with deleting a folder. And what I had was a folder I no longer needed, and I wanted to get rid of it. Well, I went in to try to get rid of it. And it wouldn't delete. And when I would try to delete it, it would tell me that the folder cannot be deleted because you do not have sufficient permissions for some of the items. That's roughly what it said anyway. Anyway, it said I did not have permission to for some of the items, okay? So I kept going in trying to change the permissions on that folder. Now, keep in mind, on this particular drive, I have the checkbox check that says ignore ownership permissions on this volume. But I was still getting this anyway. And I sat there and I fiddled with it, and I fiddled with it for the longest time, and to no avail. So I decided, well, I would set up a root account, and which I did, and I logged in as administrator. See, on the I don't know how it is on Windows, but on a Macintosh, you have to have at least one account in your own name, and then you can have a root-level account you know, for administrator access, and then you can have multiple accounts from there, but you at least have to have one in your own name, because some applications will not work under root privileges, okay? So anyway, I proceeded to boot up as system administrator and went back in there, tried to delete the same folder again. No avail. So I thought, well, okay. Two can play this game as well as one, and there's nothing that makes me any more angry than a computer telling me, particularly one that I own and have full administrative rights to, telling me that I don't have permission to do this or do that. You know, because I'm the kind of guy who'll say, just stand back and watch. So anyway, I called John O'Fallon. Now, John is the one that I interviewed here a while back, if you remember, regarding the Rumpus FTP program. And I asked him if he had ever experienced that before. And he said no. He said what you may have to do is, if all else fails, if you got a corrupt folder hierarchy, then you may have to delete that whole hierarchy and just rename everything and start over, which I really didn't want to do because, you know, you have your various user accounts set up to access different places, and I'd have to go in and redo those all over again, and the thought of that just drove me absolutely nuts. So anyway, I got off the phone with him. And I thought, you know, just for grins, I'm going to bring my laptop downstairs and I'll just hook the server up via FireWire to the FireWire port on my laptop and boot it up in what's called target disk mode. Now, for those of you on the Windows side don't know what target disk is, when you boot a Macintosh in target disk, it bypasses all computer functions and the machine effectively becomes a large hard drive that can be mounted on the desktop of another Macintosh. And if the drive is split into partitions, then you can mount both partitions that way. So anyway, I proceeded to do this, and I thought, well, maybe I can go in from another machine and try to correct this problem. Well, I did, and it still wouldn't delete the folder. I still couldn't get rid of it. Kept beating it to death, man. I went in there, and I finally checked all the permissions on it, and everything looked good. And so then I decided to, I thought, well, just for grins, I'll just copy all this stuff over to my laptop, that's on this server on this particular part of the, you know, on this particular hard drive. And I will see if I can delete it from there. And then after I delete it from my laptop, then I will copy it all back over. So I did. I selected everything that needed to be copied and copied it over to my laptop, to the second partition on my laptop. Went smoothly enough. Everything copied like it was supposed to. Got the project all done and discovered that it still wasn't going to delete from there either. That I couldn't get rid of the copy that I had created. And so I thought, well, okay, I'll just copy it all back over then. So I copied it back over, and afterwards I thought, let's see what happens if I go into the root level and select everything and see if I can delete everything off the laptop. Well, now that worked, but I just couldn't delete that one nested folder, okay? So I was getting pretty aggravated by that point, and I took a break and came upstairs for a while and did some other putzing around and got to thinking about it more and more and more, and I grabbed my laptop and I sat down and I started messing with it again. Booted up, of course, in the root level mode so that I would be logged in as system administrator. And I started checking each level of the folder hierarchy from the root all the way down and discovered that the problem was not with the folder that I was trying to delete, but it was with the folder that I had marked broadcasts. I have a folder called broadcasts, and that folder is where I store a lot of the stuff that we do, you know, the higher quality versions of the broadcasts that we do, as well as other stuff, and, you know, that pertain to the broadcast. And so I did a get info on that folder, on that broadcast folder, and I started going down and I saw this checkbox checked locked. And so I proceeded to uncheck it. Actually, no, wait a minute. I'll back up just a little bit, because there's one other thing I did before I got to the point of the box being the lock box being checked. By the way, you can lock folders so they can't be moved in OS 10. So let me just tell you that right now. I went in, I made a copy of this. I made another copy of that broadcast folder named the same thing, but I had it out on the root level, and I just copied everything out of that broadcast folder to the other broadcast folder I created on the root level so I wouldn't lose any of my material. And then I went and deleted everything out of that original broadcast folder and then went to try to delete it again. That's when it told me it was locked. That's how it went. And at that point, that's when I went in and found that lock button and unchecked it, and I was able to delete the original folder just fine. And in that case, I just went ahead and copied the broadcast folder copy that I created on the root level back to the original spot that that one was in. Now, the reason this is so confusing is because the system did not tell me that it was locked when it had items in it. It just told me I didn't have enough permission, sufficient permission to access some of the items or to delete some of the items in this case. Once the folder was empty, that's when it finally said, you know, that's when the system finally reported back with the dialogue stating that the folder was locked. And the reason I bring this up is because if you inadvertently lock one of your folders and wonder why it's not deleting, that can really throw you a curve, because you'll get conflicting messages from the operating system, okay? So please be aware of that, so you don't go through the same heartache I went through, because that folder is permanently rooted there until you unlock it. And sometimes that can simply be a problem. Now, I don't remember locking this broadcast folder in the spot that it was in, but either I did it one time or something locked it, because by golly, it was sure locked and I couldn't move it for nothing. It was not going to let me move it to the trash. I even tried going in through the FTP login itself, you know, like you normally log into an FTP server and try to kick it out, and that wouldn't even kick it out. In fact, going in via the FTP route, it said the folder cannot be deleted for some unknown reason. when I went in through Transmit, which is the FTP client that I use on the other computers. So, just a word to the wise, if you ever get a folder that absolutely will not delete, don't pay so much attention to the messages that you're getting back from OS X from the Finder. Pay more attention to the fact of whether that folder is locked, and you can do that by doing a get info, and then going down, and there will be a checkbox there that you can uncheck. They'll say checkbox checked, locked, and just uncheck that, and then quit out of that get info window, and then do command delete, and that folder will go ahead and move to the trash. The biggest problem you're going to have is if you're having a problem with a folder that's nested deep down in there, you're going to have to go through the entire folder hierarchy and find out at what point this problem starts. And that's where it could really get interesting, because you could have folders nested inside of other folders. The only way you can really find that out is make something like a small alias of something else, and then do a test copy paste routine at different levels until you find the level that won't let you paste. And if you find that level, then you know you have found the problem. And once you get that at the first level, then back out of that first level, do a get info, and then find that checkbox and uncheck it, and everything will return just fine. So just a word of the wise on that. If there's any other questions I can answer, you can let me know. Sam@theinformationcorner.com. That's Sam@theinformationcorner.com. And my number where I can be reached, at least for now, is 360-515-3590. Although if we get the kind of ice storm they're saying we're supposed to get here, if the lines are down, you may not get me at all. So we'll just have to see how that all plays itself out. And maybe I'll go in and I'll route that number over to my Voxalot account, which will funnel that in through voicemail, and if nothing else, voice messages can be left in that voicemail until I get back up online, should there be a problem. So we'll see how it all goes. All right. Next thing on the agenda, question. Mac users only in this case, because I don't know, I don't know. And I guess if those of you as Windows users want to answer this question, you can too. I've been having a strange situation when posting files for Blind Cool Tech, and I want to know if some of you have on the using the FTP access points for Blind Cool Tech. I ran into a problem one time where I went and uploaded a file, and it looked real good, like everything was uploading just like it was supposed to. I was watching the counter was dropping off, everything looked real good, as the file progressed. And then when it got up there, I quit out of Transmit, which is the FTP program that I use. And I sent an email off to Larry to let him know that a file was posted. This was clear back in the summer when this first incident happened. And I got an email back from him saying he couldn't find a file. And I said, can't find a file? I posted one. I was thinking to myself, So anyway, I told him, I said, well, we did post one. I don't know what happened, but I said, we posted one. So later on, I went and tried the repeat process of posting the file again. And one of the things that I have noticed, and it doesn't seem to matter whether the file is successful at uploading or not, apparently, if I post something on the FTP servers for Blind Cool Tech, if I post something and I go in under the, if I go into the directory where I just posted the file, and if I do a refresh of Transmit, the file will no longer show up, which is very tricky because you think, well, my goodness, I posted something and nothing winds up going up there. Now, a typical trick that some Windows servers will use, and I don't know if these are Windows servers or not, but I know this trick exists because I used to see it happen when I was tech support for a company called Integrity Network Services when I was up in Kansas City. Is that a Windows server, let's say there's only a certain amount of disk space allocated for something to be posted, okay? Let's say that the disk space that is allocated for you to post is 500 megs. Okay, let's just use that as a ballpark figure. Well, let's say you have a file that's 700 megabytes. Okay, so you start posting, and the problem is that at least at this time, and I don't know if it's been resolved since in future editions of Windows Server. The crazy thing would go ahead and let you post and make you think everything's going fine, and then after you got done posting, it wouldn't be there. In other words, it wouldn't give you a permission denied or the file's too large or anything like that. It just go ahead and post like normal. You would think everything was posting okay, but then when you would go and look in the directory after you were done, there'd be nothing there, indicating that the thing would go ahead and let you post, and then after you got it posted, it would just go ahead and delete it. And that used to really burn me up about the Windows servers because I don't know, it may be resolved by now, but in future editions of Windows. But at that time, that was a heck of a problem that we had. And I had to move the FTP server that I was running for them over there. I had to move me over to Linux because Linux wouldn't do that. Now, one plus that the Windows server had over Linux was that if you posted an incomplete file, let's say if something you were trying to post didn't get completely up there, it wouldn't leave a partial file there. We'd just go ahead and kick it out. And, which could be good. You know, a lot of people probably may say that's a problem. I thought it was pretty good because there's no way when you can, on FTP, you can resume downloads if they fail, but you can't resume uploads, okay? So there's no point for a half a file sitting there anyway. So that was a good thing in that regard. But the one bad thing that I hated about the Windows server is if you didn't know the amount of disk space that was allocated in a given area that you were posting, you would waste all that time posting a file only to find out after you got the whole project done that the server just kicked it out because it was either too large or whatever the case may be. Okay. I'm running into the same similar problem when posting for Blind Cool Tech, except in the past two cases, Larry has gotten both files, but yet after I posted in this case, I couldn't see what I posted. I went into the directory area, and I didn't see anything that was posted. So one of two things may be going on, and I'm curious about this. Are those servers set up to where you cannot view anything that's posted? In other words, are they upload directories only, and you cannot see the contents of anything else that's in there? Is that what the deal is, or what? You know, because it's really hard to know what you're doing, and I've had several failed uploads because I wasn't able to see the contents of what was there. And I don't know about the rest of you, but when I go to do something, I like to know that it got done, and so I always double check my work when I get done posting a file or something to make sure that it went into the target directory that it's supposed to go into on the FTP server. So if any of you have had any experiences similar to mine in posting and have been confused like I have, let me know. Now, keep in mind, I run an FTP server here, so I'm not inexperienced at running FTP. It's just that when you're running a Unix-based server, which is what all Mac computers are now, server or otherwise, Unix handles the situation differently than Windows. So I'm curious to find out what kind of servers these are, perhaps, and also what the deal is as far as when posting files into the directory. One of the questions that would be nice to know is, what's the maximum megabyte size? In other words, what's the maximum size file that I can put up there, for example? One of the things that I've started doing because of that problem I had is I'm now recording all of my podcasts at 48 kbps because so far I've been able to get them all situated up there and there has never been a problem. So that's just a question that I would like for some of you to answer if you possibly could. Okay, one other thing that I want to mention that some of you may not be aware of in OS X, and some of you may have seen it in there and wondered what it was, is a feature called Bonjour, as it's pronounced. And it is an interesting little feature. If you have a Macintosh running a program called Audio Hijack Pro, you can do some amazing things with Bonjour. You can send audio from that Macintosh in a high-quality stream through your internet subnet. And I'm not talking about just standard audio like you would use for Shoutcast or anything like that. We're talking real high-quality stuff, because remember, most of your internal networks now are running 10/100, so they're very, very fast, very efficient. And I found this by accident one day because I happened to be goofing around with another program that I'm running on my FTP server. Yes, my FTP server is doubling also as a Shoutcast-type streaming thing for now. Eventually, I'm going to slave that out to a service where I can get more bandwidth slots, but for now, I'm doing it off my DSL connection. But anyway, there is a feature by which you can send not only audio out, streaming audio out using a program like Nicecast, which is put out by the same people who produce Audio Hijack Pro. That's Rogan Eva software. But you can also add this Bonjour thing into the mix. And what's kind of nice about it is that at the same time I'm streaming over to the person who picks up our broadcasts for Dixie Broadcasting, I can also send out a higher quality feed that's only available in there on my subnet through that Bonjour setup. And I can record the show, the broadcast on my laptop in a higher quality format, totally separate and apart from whatever I'm streaming. In other words, I can send my stream out at 24 kbps right off my DSL connection. And I can send a full-fledged PCM audio stream to my laptop, and my laptop will pick it up using another copy of Audio Hijack Pro, and I can have it sitting there just recording off of that feed, and it'll go ahead and code into MP3, and I have a high quality MP3 version of the broadcast, totally different quality than what I'm streaming out. So the two streams are totally independent. Now, what's the purpose of this, you might ask? Well, the purpose of it was originally set up for programs like, there's one out there that Apple has called Front Row, and I don't know much about it other than the fact that I think it allows you to control various facets of audio on your computer via remote control that can be had, but I don't know much more about it than that. If some of you know, maybe you can tell me. I just use Audio Hijack and be done with it. Now, what makes this interesting, to make this work, you have to go into Audio Hijack Pro, get everything all set up the way you want it, or Nicecast, either one of those two programs from Rogan Eva, and then you click on the Effects tab. After you get everything else all set up the way you want it, you click on the Effects tab, and then there's a little area that says Scroll Area. The voiceover will say Scroll Area right by that Effects tab, and when you put your cursor over that scroll area, You hold down on the control and the option keys, and you click the 5 key, which is the the number 5 on the mouse keys, which is the calculator keypad. Now, this is assuming you have mouse keys turned on, which is available in universal access, okay? So anyway, you hold down the control and option keys and click the 5 key on the calculator keypad when you have your cursor in this scroll area, and it'll pop up a little known menu that exists there. And you'll go down, and what you'll want to select is Apple Unit Effect submenu. And then you do Control Option and the space bar once you get there. And then you select the Apple effects from the list of items that are there. And you Control Option space bar again, which is the way to click on that. And once you're in the Apple effects, then you just go down through the list. And the first thing you want to pick up for the host computer is an effect called AudioNet Send. So you select that, and then you do Control Option Space once you get your cursor over that, which will equal select, or I suppose you could do return. Either way, it'll do it, I think. and AudioNet Send will pop up, and it'll give you several options. One, you can password protect the feed that's going to come through the Bossier streaming network, or you can choose to leave it wide open, which I never use a password. It's on my local subnet, so who cares? And then there's the port number, which you can change. I would leave it at 52,800. That's the port number that AudioNet Send uses. Then there's an option that allows you to pick from PCM audio, Apple lossless 24, Apple lossless 16. There's several others in there. There's also AAC 128 kbps per channel, AAC 96 kbps per channel, AAC 64 kbps per channel, AAC 32 kbps per channel. There may be some other ones in between that I'm missing, but you get the drift. And then there's also a field where you can change the name of the stream, and you can put whatever name you want in there. So once you get that set up, you click Connect, okay? And that's assuming you're on the host computer at the time you're doing this, whatever computer's going to host the stream. And you can hijack audio using this Bossier feature from either Audio Hijack, or you can use Nicecast. Either one of those programs will work with that feature. Next, you go to the other computer, which is going to be the receiving computer, and you can have either a copy of Audio Hijack or whichever one of them you want on there. It's a little hard to run two copies of Nicecast in the same house because they both default to their actual real stream. The stream that they would normally put out would default at 8,100, which would be the port number for the built-in server that's in that program. So I would assume on the other computer you might have a copy of Audio Hijack. So you go into Audio Hijack and you get all your settings set up. And then you go under the effects tab in there and you do the same thing I told you before with control option, mouse keys and all of that. Go into Apple Unit Effects again. In this case, on the computer that's going to be receiving the audio, you go down to AudioNet Receive. And you go down to AudioNet Receive, and that'll pop up another window. And in that window, you would move your cursor along until you see a little table there that you can interact with. When you get into that table, then you will see that other computer showing up in that table, the host machine that you just set up. So you put your cursor over the name that's coming off that other computer, the name of that stream that you've just set up. Then you stop interacting with that table and go down to a button that says Select Host. And you click on that, and that will tell the AudioNet Receive, this is who I want to receive. Then you simply go down and click Connect. And then right next to the Connect button, it should either say Not Connected or Connected. And if it says Connected, then close that window. And then go over and hit either Hijack or Record in Audio Hijack Pro on that machine. And then hit your mute to see if there's any audio coming through, assuming you're feeding something from the other computer. And voila, it should be working just fine. Now, some of you may wonder, what is the purpose for this? Well, there isn't a whole lot of purpose normally, other than the fact if you have two computers and maybe, let's say, one computer has a whole big stereo library of stuff on it that you may want to hear in another part of the house, and maybe the other computers in the other part of the house don't have that library available. You could have maybe one computer piped into your stereo and the other computer off in some other part of the house. And if you have, say, something like Audio Hijack set up to hijack audio from iTunes or something like that, you could play your library through a stereo that you might have set up in another part of the house. So that would be the advantage of such a thing. And it's just an interesting little tool I found built into that. And there's tons of other effects. You'll just have to experiment and see what you like and what you don't. Now, any effect that you set up in Audio Hijack, if you put your cursor over that scroll area after you're done with that effect and hit delete, it'll just delete by itself, it'll kick that effect out of there, and it won't be there anymore. So they're real easy to get rid of, so don't worry about not being able to get rid of them. But this is just one of the things that I thought some of you might find interesting if you are a Macintosh user and you use these programs. They have some interesting little hidden features that you might want to explore. And it's just going to be trial and error. I hope in the next version of OS X that they refine it just a little bit better. But for now, that is how the Bonjour feature works. And by the way, one bad problem with it, let's say you like it so well, you say, I'm going to leave that on that host computer all the time. One bad problem, don't reboot the host computer, because if you do, you'll lose it. And you'll have to set it up all over again. You'll have to delete the original effect because it'll get disoriented and get lost. And then you'll have to reset up the AudioNet send all over again on the host computer. So just something for you to think about there with that whole thing. Anyway, with that, I think I've rattled your chains enough here on this podcast. So I hope you all have a good weekend, certainly better than we're going to have, it looks like. But hope you all have a splendid weekend. And I hope I gave you some information that you would find useful here. And also, I hope that some of you might be able to answer some of my questions here regarding the problems with FTP postings. Maybe there's something that I'm missing here, but having goofed around with FTP as long as I can remember, I don't know that that's the case, because the one time when I had a file that didn't post like it was supposed to, there was nothing, by the way, in the log on transmit indicating that anything went wrong. So that was another thing that was goofy, too. So anyway, enough of that for now. Y'all take care, and we will talk to you soon. Take care. God bless. Bye-bye.